Ever get that feeling? Like you just aced a training course, felt super confident you got it all. Then, like a week later, poof, it's gone.
Oh, totally. That's actually what we're diving into today, why we forget so much of what we learn in training.
Yeah, we're going to unpack the science behind it. And more importantly, what you can actually do to make that learning stick around longer.
Right. Because, the numbers are kind of crazy when you look at it. We're talking billions spent on training every year.
Billions.
Billions. But our sources, they're saying that like a week later, sometimes almost 90% of that knowledge is just
Yep,
gone.
and 90%. It's
Yep.
like throwing money down the drain.
It really is. It's a huge waste, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, a lot of the problem comes down to how most training is designed. Like, it's all about just getting through the
So the
material.
box.
Exactly. Not about whether you actually remember it later.
Or whether you can actually use what you learn, right?
Exactly. Like, what's the point of all that effort if you can't apply it in the real world?
Totally.
Yeah.
So that's where the good news comes in. There's actually a whole science behind how our brains learn and remember things.
And it's fascinating stuff. We're talking neuroscience, behavioral
And
science.
it's not just for, formal training programs.
No, not at all. It applies to all sorts of learning.
Like,
Oh, picking up a new skill, leadership development, even just improving how you communicate ideas, anything.
so the key is to design learning that works with the brain.
Right, with how our brains are naturally wired. And when you do that, the results can be incredible.
So let's get down to the nuts and bolts. How does our brain actually learn? Like, how does it decide what to keep and what to just toss out?
Great question. It turns out there are different types of memory involved.
Okay, hit me with them.
Okay, so first up, there's something called working memory. Think of it like your brain's little temporary storage
A
space.
mental sticky note?
Kinda, yeah. It's where you hold the information you're actively working with, like right this second. But here's the catch. It's pretty limited.
Running out.
It can only hold on to like 4 to 7 pieces of information at once, max.
Wow, that's not a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty small, right?
So if you try to cram too much in there.
It's like trying to stuff a suitcase that's already bursting. Nothing else fits.
Makes sense. So that's working memory, the short-term holding area. What happens next? Where does the information go if it needs to stick around?
That's where long-term memory comes in. This is the big storage vault where stuff can hang out potentially forever.
Oh, so this is where we want the training knowledge to end up.
Yep, exactly. And there are different kinds of long-term memory. Our sources talk about like explicit memory.
Explicit.
That's basically being able to consciously remember facts and experiences.
Like remembering the steps in a process.
Exactly. And then there's implicit memory. This is more unconscious. It's about skills and habits you develop through practice.
So like knowing how to use a software program without really thinking about it.
Yeah, it's like muscle memory, but for your brain.
Got it. So explicit stuff you can actively recall. Implicit, more automatic. What else?
Okay, then there's episodic memory. And this one's super interesting for learning because, our brains are really good at remembering
Like
experiences.
things that actually happened to us.
Right. Things we've lived through. And those memories tend to be a lot stronger than just like abstract facts.
Makes sense. Like, I always remember trips or events way better than just reading about them.
Exactly. It's because you live them, you have a personal connection. And that's why, those scenario-based training programs can be so effective.
Maybe get an experience.
Yes. And lastly, there's semantic memory. This is where we store general knowledge about the world, like facts, concepts, that kind of thing.
Okay, so we've got all these different ways our brains store information. But it sounds like traditional training doesn't really take advantage of how these systems work.
That's a big part of the problem. A lot of training just ignores how our brains actually learn.
Which brings us to what our sources call the four biggest memory killers in training. What are those?
Okay, the first one. And we kind of touched on this already with working memory, is cognitive overload. This happens when you're just hit with way too much information too fast.
Like drinking from a fire hose.
Exactly. Your brain's just like, whoa, hold on. I can't process this much at once.
System overload.
And the result is, well, you don't remember much, and you probably get pretty disengaged too, because it's overwhelming.
Totally. So that's killer number one, cognitive overload. What's the next one?
Number two is lack of reinforcement.
Reinforcement.
Yeah, learning something once, it's not enough. Like, if you don't revisit it, if you don't use it, your brain's gonna decide it's not important.
And just let it fade away.
Exactly. Like, it's like you're building a muscle, but then you never use it.
Atrophies.
Yep. And then the third memory killer passive learning.
Oh, this one's a classic, right?
Yeah, the endless PowerPoint slides, the monotone lectures. It's so easy to just zone out.
And even if you're paying attention, are you really absorbing it?
Right, because it's passive. You're not actively engaging with the information. And that's crucial for forming strong memories.
Okay, passive learning, not effective.
Not really. And finally, the fourth memory killer is lack of emotional engagement.
Because our brains love drama.
Exactly. Our brains are wired to prioritize things that trigger an emotion. You know, if something's exciting, surprising, maybe even a little scary, we remember it.
But if it's just dull and boring?
Yeah, our brains are like, not important, let's forget this one.
Okay, those four memory killers make a lot of sense. And I'm already thinking about training sessions I've been in that hit all four of those.
Yeah, it's pretty common, unfortunately.
Now, our sources keep bringing up this term, cognitive load theory. What's that all about?
It's basically a framework for understanding why we get overwhelmed, why learning can feel so hard sometimes.
Okay, tell me more.
So the basic idea is that our brains have limited mental resources, right, for processing information. And that limit, that's what we call cognitive load.
Like a mental bandwidth.
Yeah, kinda. And there are actually different types of cognitive load.
Hit me.
Okay, so first, there's intrinsic load. This is about how complex the information itself is. Like, some topics are just naturally more demanding.
Yeah, like trying to understand quantum physics is going to have a higher intrinsic load than learning how to bake a cake.
Exactly. One's just inherently more complex.
Makes sense. What's the next kind of load?
Okay, then there's extraneous load. This is load that's added on by how the information is presented rather than the information itself.
Like if the training materials are confusing or poorly organized.
Yes. It's like distractions. Think yeah. Cluttered slides, jargon that's not explained.
Uh-huh. So that's taking up valuable mental bandwidth that could be used to actually understand the content.
Exactly. It's like trying to have a conversation in a really noisy room. The noise is the extraneous load, making it harder to focus on the actual message.
Okay, so intrinsic load, the complexity of the material. Extraneous load, the distraction. What's the last one?
The last one is germane load. And this is actually a good kind of load. It's the mental effort you put into making sense of new information.
Like actively connecting the dots.
Exactly. Linking it to what you already know, building those mental models. This is the kind of load that we want to encourage.
So good training should try to maximize germane load and minimize that extraneous load.
Exactly. Make the information clear and engaging, but not overwhelming.
So why does so much training end up feeling like an information overload?
Right.
What are the common culprits?
Well, for one, long training sessions can be a killer. They just exceed our attention spans and our working memory capacity, which, remember, is already pretty limited.
Right. We talked about that little mental sticky note.
Yeah.
It can only hold so much.
Exactly. Yeah. And then there's the death by PowerPoint problem.
Oh, yeah.
Dense slides, walls of text, complex visuals. It's too much to process. And then trying to introduce too many new concepts all at once.
Again, overload.
Yeah, it doesn't give your brain time to absorb each piece. And then, of course, if the training is passive, you know, no interaction, no activities, that's a recipe for forgetting.
Because our brains need to be actively involved.
Exactly.
So how do we combat all this? How do we make training more digestible?
Our sources talk about breaking the content down into smaller chunks. It's called micro-learning.
Micro-learning?
Yeah. It helps with that working memory issue because you're only focusing on a bit at a time. And then there's this idea of progressive disclosure.
Okay, progressive disclosure.
It's basically introducing more complex ideas gradually, building on what you've already learned.
So you're laying a foundation.
Exactly, and keeping visuals simple.
No more PowerPoint madness.
Well, PowerPoint can be fine, but it has to be used well. Clear visuals, relevant examples.
Support the learning, not distract from it.
Exactly. Our sources are really big on micro-learning and space learning. They're both key to reducing that cognitive overload.
And space learning. That ties into something else we wanted to talk about, right? The forgetting curve.
Yeah, exactly. Space learning helps combat that forgetting curve.
Okay, so what is this forgetting curve thing?
It's basically this idea that we forget things over time, like it's natural.
I mean, yeah, we all know that, but there's a specific curve.
Right. So this guy, Hermann Ebbinghaus, back in the 1800s, he did all this research on memory.
Back in the day?
Yeah. And he found that we forget things really fast. Like within 24 hours, we can lose up to 70% of new information.
Wow, 70%. That's like most of it.
It is. And then within a week, it can be up to 90%, unless we do something to reinforce it.
So one-off training events are basically fighting a losing battle.
Yeah, you cram all this information into one day, but then, poof, it's gone.
Okay, so how do we fight this forgetting curve?
That's where spaced repetition comes in.
Spaced repetition.
It's all about revisiting information and increasing intervals. So instead of just learning it once and moving on,
you come back to it again and again.
Yeah. And each time, you space out the reviews a little bit more. The idea is to review it right before you're likely to forget it.
It's like giving your brain a little nudge to say, hey, remember this. It's still important.
Exactly. And when you do that, those neural connections get stronger and the memory becomes more durable.
So give us some examples of how to actually do spaced repetition in training.
Sure. Think about like micro-learning modules delivered at regular intervals after a training session. Or follow-up quizzes scheduled a few days later and then again a few weeks later.
I like that. Keeps it fresh.
Right. And even, you know, AI-powered reminders that pop up just when you're likely to forget something.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And even managers can play a role, like by regularly asking team members to explain or apply what they learned in meetings. And, of course, scenario-based exercises, putting that knowledge into practice.
That all makes so much sense.
Right.
So spaced repetition, a great way to beat the forgetting curve.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about another key strategy that our sources highlight, active recall.
Yes, this is so important. Active recall is all about actively trying to retrieve information from your memory.
Like without looking at your notes or anything.
Exactly. It's like testing yourself. But the real benefit isn't the score. It's the act of trying to remember.
So just rereading my notes over and over isn't going to cut it.
Not as effective as active recall. Because when you force your brain to work for the information,
it strengthens the connection.
Yes. It's like building a muscle, but for your memory. And there's research to back this up. It's called the testing effect.
Testing effect.
Researchers like Roediger and Butler, they found that active recall leads to way better long-term retention than just passive review.
Interesting. So why does passive learning just not cut it?
Because you're not challenging your brain. It's not actively searching for the information. It's just receiving it.
So how do we use active recall in training?
Well, one way is frequent low-stakes quizzes. And again, it's not really about the grade. It's about making you recall the information.
The act of retrieval.
Exactly. And then there's this thing called the teach-back method.
Teach-back.
You basically ask someone to explain a concept in their own words.
So they have to really understand it to explain it.
Exactly. And it forces them to retrieve that information and organize it in a way that makes sense to them.
I like that. And then, of course, there are those scenario-based exercises.
Right, where you have to actually use what you've learned to solve a problem. And our sources talk about using things like post-training knowledge checks, managers incorporating opportunities for employees to apply what they've learned in meetings.
Really integrating it.
Yes. Case studies, AI-driven simulations, so many ways to get people actively recalling and using the information.
Okay, active recall. Crucial for making learning stick. Now let's talk about something a little different, but super powerful.
Emotion.
Yeah, the role of emotion in learning.
It's amazing how much more we remember things that have an emotional connection for us.
Totally. It's like if something's really exciting or scary or even just funny,
we're way more likely to remember it.
It makes sense, right?
Oh.
Our brains are constantly bombarded with information, so they have to filter.
And emotion is a big part of that filtering process.
Like a highlighter, saying, hey, pay attention to this.
Exactly. If something triggers an emotion, our brains are more likely to flag it as important and store it in long-term memory.
It's like those vivid memories we have from childhood, the ones that still make us laugh or cringe.
Yeah, those are the ones that had an emotional impact. And that's what we need to do with training, make it emotionally resonant.
So how does emotion actually work in the brain to boost memory?
Well, there's this part of the brain called the amygdala, which is like the emotion center.
Okay, amygdala.
And when you experience an emotion, the amygdala sends a signal to another part of the brain called the hippocampus.
Hippocampus.
Which is crucial for memory formation. So basically, the amygdala is saying, hey, hippocampus, this is important. Pay attention.
Love that. So practically speaking, how do we make training more emotional?
Well, storytelling is huge. Stories engage our emotions, and they help us connect with the information on a deeper level.
Yeah, stories are powerful.
And then using real-world scenarios where the consequences matter.
So it's not just theoretical.
Exactly. Gamification is another great tool. It adds those elements of challenge, competition, reward.
Keeps it fun.
Right. And social learning.
Oh, like learning from each other.
Exactly. Discussions, collaborations, sharing experiences. It taps into our social needs, which are also emotional.
And even just like surprising people.
Yeah.
Injecting a little humor.
Yeah. Anything that breaks the monotony and grabs their attention.
Okay. Emotion, a key ingredient for sticky learning. Let's move on to the final piece of the puzzle that our sources talk about. AI.
AI. This is where things get really exciting.
Because
AI can help us personalize learning and reinforcement in a way that's just not possible with traditional methods.
Especially when you're trying to train a lot of people at once.
Right. So how can AI improve retention? Well, it can create personalized learning paths. Ah, so it's tailored to each person.
Exactly. Taking into account their existing knowledge, their learning style, even your job role.
No more one-size-fits-all training.
And AI can also facilitate just-in-time learning.
Okay, what's that?
It's basically delivering information right when someone needs it. So, like, if the AI system predicts that you're likely to forget a certain concept.
They'll give you a little refresher.
Exactly, at just the right moment. And then there's the whole spaced repetition thing. AI can automate that.
So it'll keep track of when you need to revisit different concepts.
Yeah, and schedule those reminders for you.
Pretty amazing stuff. So how's AI actually being used in training right now?
Well, we're seeing things like personalized micro-learning recommendations, where AI suggests specific modules based on your progress.
So it's like a learning concierge.
Kind of. And then there are AI-driven assessments and feedback systems that can give more targeted and immediate feedback.
Uh-huh. So you know right away what you need to work on. And predictive analytics, which can identify people who might be struggling and offer them extra support.
So AI can really help us scale all these retention strategies.
Exactly. And that's huge. Because it means we can actually make sure that people are retaining and applying what they learn, not just going through the motions.
So to sum it all up,
yeah,
we need to design learning experiences that work with the brain.
Right, not against it.
Be mindful of cognitive load. Use spaced repetition. Get people actively recalling information. Make it emotional. Make it relevant. And use AI to personalize and reinforce the whole thing.
Exactly. And if you're involved in training, whether as a learner or a trainer, it's worth asking yourself, is this learning designed for retention?
Or is it just about checking a box? So here's a final thought for you. What if learning wasn't just a one-time event? What if it was something that actually stuck with you? How much more could you achieve? How much more could your organization achieve? Think about one piece of information you've learned recently. How could you apply some of these techniques to make sure you remember it and use it in the future? Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.